Okay. I mean, from the organization point of view, do you have any kind of whatever questions or open things which we should consider or discuss or solve?
Yeah, so 2 points. The Wi-Fi password is over there, and can somebody monitor the Tickle chat in the room? If not, it is also okay. It is just, normally we have the habit that's later in the Tickle parts that we try to monitor the TK chat, and yeah, I'm, well, yeah.
I mean, there's no Wi-Fi password, it's just if you go to the Wi-Fi, the strongest signal you take, and there's no password on it.
Yeah.
Therefore, it's just saying the name, it's a strange name, it's called something like
MonRIF
Wi-Fi. And that's the right one. Okay, then I think I will switch afterwards to the slides, which are already in the presentation, if I find it.
I will probably close the camera for most participants that are not the conference to save bandwidth,
just a
message, because Manfred was trying to show himself, which is fine, but we are going to shut the videos.
Okay. I think, I hope everybody has heard it, it's just, it's nothing about personal, it's just about bandwidth.
Of course.
It's just,
And shortly, or maybe it's already there, we will put the link to the Zoom conferences on the website, so you will be able to share it.
No,
it's done already. Okay. So feel free to share it with your friends and partners to attend the conference as well.
Maybe it's also a good idea to put it on some, whatever, in the chat.
Already done.
Okay, good. Perfect. Good, great.
See, the people are there, so it worked. Australia is on there.
Good morning, Australia.
Good night.
Good night. Okay, let's start with my first presentation, and I'm already here on my presentation stand. And in the last conference, I had already some kind of presentation of what's coming up with Navi Server next release, and therefore actually we somehow made it. Navi Server 5 was released these days, and I mean it's not often happens that a major version number in this community is changing. I mean we had the series of Navi Server 4.0 went up to 4.099, and at the end I think also version something like 31. I mean many of these were releases, and it was half year releases more or less from the base. What can I say? I mean it's now it's out, and you can say, was the world waiting for Navi Server 5? And
yes!
I have to admit, probably no. And as also mentioned before, I would expect that some people are unhappy about the new release, even a major release, because many things have changed and they're afraid, what will happen with my installation? Will it break? What to look at and whatever, but therefore probably I'm causing more grief than happiness. But the next point was it necessary? And I would say yes. Yes, for many reasons. I mean, one typical reason is security. The world is changing, and it's not the same we had 5 years ago or 10 years ago, and therefore installations are checked by external auditors, and they figure out, you have done this and this, your installation is insecure. We cannot run in our enterprise the software anymore because it's insecure. And people are happy to find arguments why older installations are getting rid of, and people can buy new stuff from other vendors or just get rid of the old stuff. I mean, it's managers often happy about this, not the users or the people running the systems, but it happens from the management point of view. And there's more and more IT auditors coming up and they're making pressure to do something. Therefore, there are many security issues, potential issues in all old software. There's nothing bad, especially about Navi server in earlier releases, but as every other software, it has to be innovated. And therefore, it's a thing which we have to more or less proceed. You can see some number of times. I mean, version 3.0 was coming out in the year 2000. 4.0 was 1 year later. It was actually quite a short period. And then 4.99 was coming out in 2005. And this was actually 20 years ago. Therefore, it's really time for the users. And there are many changes. And if one looks at the commit logs, which are going back to the year 2000 actually, it is the largest release ever from Navi server. And I mean, you see here it's 522 files changed and 78,000 injections, 33,000 insertions, and 33,000 change line. And the change log itself was 18K lines. And actually, it was for me very hard, and it took me a very long time to process these 18K lines of changes. And I'm not talking about the diff, about just the commit messages here. And to digest this and summarize it, it was the hardest part of the release for me is to write the change log. I mean, it really was causing me pain. And but I think it's necessary, and it's also a sign that one should do it more often. And using this kind of work. And there are some architectural changes, and there are many new features, and I'm not going through this 18K of lines and just picking up things. I just picked up a few things here which are more or less interesting. I mean, I'm not going into details of TTL 9 support, it's important, but TTL 9 support also doesn't mean, okay, it compiles now, but it also runs now, and it uses TTL 9 features. I mean, it's just many things here. I mean, for example, long argument lists, whatever, are in place, and you do not need this now if you use TTL 9, but you should use more or less in your interfaces anyhow. And there are many security enhancements, and we'll cover this quite soon. There's many things change from, let's say, scalability, flexibility, configurability. I will cover this a little bit on the slides. I mean, it's also, things have changed because people are running software in containers. They want to have many different versions, and it has implications how to deal with configuration files and how you set up environments. And therefore, you need more flexibility from this point of view. And there's also substantial cleanup of code. I mean, there were many things written in the command, this thing is deprecated. And if you look at the history, it says like this for 15, 20 years, this thing is deprecated, but still it's used, and just try to clean it up and just to make it more or less clear what it means with the documentation. I mean, covers this a little bit. It's a very hard thing and a lot of work to do good documentation, and I will show you later how bad it actually was. Security enhancements. I mean, you see on the left side a couple of things here. These are presentations. It means these are topics which I will cover in some more details. If I read here just the headlines, more or less, security by default. I mean, you want to have installation and you put it out, it should run secure. And not, sure, you should put this flag here and this flag there and cover this. By default. I mean, it also means afterwards implications. If you have, it's very important now to have also a web server environment that acts as a client for web services, and therefore also connected web services. You get a certificate. And there are amazing papers out there showing this is more the dark hole of today's web is people turn off more or less the client certificate checks. And there's an important website which are getting the data in the back without checking a certificate. That means everybody can sneak in their different software. It's horrible. I mean, there's a paper, I think it was also posted by Ashok in the Titel list some time ago. If you read this, you say, just be very alert. And there are things like, as a new authorization framework will cover later, there are context constraints, just when to fire certain rules there in another server. There are many cryptographic improvements, and for example, in terms of password hashing, and those many things have changed a long time. It was the goal to have a, as fast as possible, password check. And just going to the hardware, when people realize that if somebody steals your hashes, they can make the attacks much better if the password check is slow. Therefore, this Argon 2 is very cool because you can configure how long it takes in the minimum to break this password, and how much memory you need to break this password, and how many threads you need to break this password in time. Therefore, it's configurable, and it's the world is moving this way, and therefore it's just adding this is, if you have a password site with hashes, it's very important to have this. There's a small difference here. And also other things which were stand up because of experience, for example, is case insensitive sets. I mean, there's many of the data kept in NavaServer called in NS sets, and this is something like, for example, headers. Is there echo? There is something.
There it is. This one.
I mean, there's the headers. I mean, the headers are by definition, by HTTP definition, a mixed case. It's just everything is case insensitive, is what I think. And if you have the set, and you have to be always aware that, okay, it's insensitive, it's okay that if you possess the data, but if you alter the data, you set the data, and you say, I want to update this whatever content length, and then you make it in a lower case, and then you get the data in uppercase or vice versa, it's horrible. I mean, it's just, and there were many cases in everywhere, in NaviServer itself, and also in OpenSES, which were people are very often careful, but they miss many cases. And the same thing is true for database attributes, for example. The same thing is true for the configuration data, and so on. I mean, it's just now you can say, from this set, this case insensitive, and the problem is gone. And things like for managing, this setting up large installations with many virtual servers is getting improved this way. There's a integration of reverse forward proxy now in the main core system, which also will cover there. There's some UI changes here and configuration stuff here, and many, many new commands which were added over the in this release. And just starting with, because I said about this NSS already, this is, what is this NSS stuff there actually? It's just a structure, more or less. Technically, it's a multi-map. Multi-map is something where you have allowed to have multiple identical keys with different data. I mean, the dict in Tickle is a map. You have a key and a value. And in a multi-map, you have the same key multiple times with different values. It's just somewhat more flexible. And of course, people working with the code believe often, also experienced developers, why I don't get the right value here. I've set it here, but they've forgotten it's a multi-set. It's just getting the first value out is not the right thing, therefore it's messing up. And therefore one has to deal with this whole thing, and also saying, and a set API is changed in a way that you can say, give me one value, give me all values, and so on. It's just additional flags. It's as flexible as possible. And here's just one example here with the, where you use actually. I mean, it's just, you can say, why we are not using dicts in NaviServer? I mean, this NSS is much older than dicts. I mean, Jim knows the history probably much better than me, but it's just an example here. I mean, just you have can have in the headers, for example, multiple entries. I mean, it's just I've seen of HTTP allow in many cases that you can have multiple of these header fields put together or just in one line. You can connect them with a semicolon. But for example, this way, and then you have to deal with this, and with dicts, it doesn't work like this. So that is just a typical thing where you're working with this. Like I said, yeah. And I mean, the same thing is also with SQL tuples. Also, the attributes in the database are, by definition, case-sensitive, and therefore it's certainly important to deal with this. I mean, this is something, this is the first point here, and it's just a clean-up at the end. It reduces the interface there, which is necessary. There's also something new, which is weeding statistics. I mean, you have a set, and you can ask a set afterwards, did anybody at any time read this property? I mean, why do you need this? I mean, you have a configuration file, and you have a typo, and you see, oh, there's a configuration. Now, I didn't read this. Why? is this maybe some legacy file from old times or whatever? And it provides you values for showing, was this configuration value read, or is this actually the default? I mean, has anybody changed this parameter? I mean, if you imagine you're running many sites, I mean, and we have users which are running 50 whatever different OpenSS sites, and you are not, if you're a manager there, you're not in detail of all of the sites, what they are doing, and some of them are running a long time. You want to get this information quickly out of this. I mean, different people have set this thing up, and you are maintaining it afterwards, therefore it's just easy life. And there's also performance improvement stuff. There's, for example, also from the last conference, just reduce the memory print or the memory scattering of the NSET implementation to make it more compact. It's very important now for, there's many differences also in newer multi-core architectures where you have multiple memory controllers to have a better cache locality, and there's a difference by a factor of 5. It's just big differences on no matter how you organize it. And just some comparisons there that which I mentioned before. That, I mean, that in the old public server versions, we had, and we still have it as deprecated, many versions starting with an I, and if you forget this I here, something like this. I mean, for example, you have some headers here, and you have here from the headers you get more or less this I get. It was a case insensitive get, an I update, and I mean, every command you have an I version, non I version. Now this is all deprecated, and you simply do a get if a case is insensitive and you don't care about this. You can create new sets by insensitive, if you want it, by providing the case, new case, but the whole thing is backward compatible. I mean, it's just the old code still continues to work, and starting with the next release, you will get complaints if you're still using this I things in this version, it's silent, but the next version will start to complain about this duplicated usage. There's also a performance difference there by using case insensitive sets. I mean, technically, the C comparison function is a factor of 20 times faster if you do not have this I version of the string comparison. Because what does it do? It takes a string, another string, compares both of them to lowercase, and compares afterwards. And now the normalized representation is kept internally in lowercase, and you don't need it. Therefore, it's also getting better and faster and easier to use. Concerning architectural changes, this is what is a slide which is showing what's going on in multiple request handling in Navi server currently, just to put it into place where the next thing is fitting in. And Navi server did a lot of things of was not in the original ILO, but was coming over the years to have here some kind of spooling threads where you have driver threads handling incoming requests. You can have multiple of these driver threads, and you have writer threads which are more or less They get some data on disk, memory, whatever, and they simply spool it to the client. And the good thing is such one of these spooling threads is able to deal at the same time with something like a couple of hundred, maybe a couple of thousand clients at the same time, single thread. Therefore, it's very efficient. And the next thing which is very important there, that these pooling parts here, which is here from the receiving request and the sending request, they are influenced by the client. It's not influenced by the server. I mean, if you're connecting from a slow device, from a mobile phone somewhere on a place where you have a bad reception, it takes forever until you get this data. They are controlling this response time, not you as a server and maintainer. It doesn't say that you can't do anything as a developer, but it's a different story. But it's like this. And there's also some consequences on attack types. I mean, there are many web servers out there, I would say most of them, which can be broken simply by the so-called slow read and slow write attacks. What does it mean? You can more or less block resources in the server by simply slowly reading or writing data. Every second, every 10 seconds, every half minute, you're sending one byte and you continue. Therefore, the server cannot stop the connection. And if you're using a thread there, the thread is taken forever. And there are famous cases in Austria from the banking system, from Generali, I noticed, where the whole banking system was shut down by slow read attacks. I mean, because the server is blocking and resources, and I mean, it's easy today. I mean, we are talking here, if you have a couple of hundred of these slow read and slow writers, can kill the server. And there are many places where also uploads and downloads of files kill the server because people are uploading it from a very slow connection and you can't prevent this, and therefore it is breaking down. But therefore there's a thing. And the basic idea is here is just you have here requests coming in, and there's a request here R0, R1, and R2. And these requests have a receiving phase, a core processing phase, and a sending phase, for instance. And just the orange parts are here placed in the connection threads where you need afterwards different threads, because these are SQL queries. You can't spread them in different threads at this time. You need in some places to think it. But the point is you improve scalability by keeping these things as small as possible and certainly get many of the things out. But it's just from this point of view, and simply the scalability goes up significantly by doing so. And the different thing is calling out a single request here. What's doing? There's a getting data, and then here's this orange phase of before. And in this orange phase, also many things happen. There's a so-called pre-auth filter, authorization, a post-auth filter, the request broke, and a trace filter. I mean, this is something for this preparing here the running of the request. And the request here typically is at the end something like a ticking script, an EDP file, or a file delivery, whatever, it's just picking up the content here. And the trace filter is typically used for logging. I mean, it's just, you want to say, okay, I want to have recordings of what's happening there, and therefore it's a trace filter. And this thing here happened over the years. And there was certainly something like some of the change, I mean, all of these filters, you have a filter chain. You can have multiple filters here. Six, whenever I get whatever, text file or something like this and some kind of a pattern match here, then do something special. And for this thing, I need authorization and whatever. It's just many of the things went in actually into these filters, but not into authorization because this was very inflexible. And the same thing, you have many filters here in place, but only a single authorization thing. And as the world changing, authorization is getting more complex, and you have often on one side many different authorities where you get different users from, and to deal with this. And what's new in RB Server 5 is that you have an authorization chain here. You can register multiple of this authorization callbacks, and these callbacks can be done from C and from the Tickle side, and by this you're more or less adding something. I mean, this authorization, for example, in OpenSES, never used this authorization before because it did everything in these pre-auth filters. I mean, you, technically, you can do everything in the pre-auth filter, which you can do in the authorization chain if you abuse it. But if you look at the code, it's somewhat weird. Why you have authorization and you don't use it? The code was here to improve the situation. And therefore, this is something new, and there's a call for register this stuff. And this picture is also somewhat simplified because we are looking here at the place of handling requests, but there are also places in NaviServer where you do not have a request per se, but you need something like a user authentication. For example, there's a thing, is a control port where admin can connect to the server. You have not, you have a URL there. You just need there a password check, more or less. And why should the password check behave very different there? Therefore, you can have here this request authorization on the registration for the request or for user authentication. And certainly, this is more or less a part of the request authentication, which is needed there. And just to see what happens there, also in the connection with Tickle World, we have here this pre-outfit and post-outfit, and here's this authorization block here. And in this authorization block, you have multiple of these authorization callbacks. And what you need there is actually two things. One thing is to tell the system, should I proceed here in this chain, or am I done? Or should I bail out completely? And this is happening more or less there via tickle OK, tickle break, and tickle return. This is built in a tickle. You have for every return thing, you have a code there you can use afterwards for using it. And the second thing you need here is, what was the result of the authorization? I mean, no matter whether it stops or not, it's a different dimension. And you want to have here in the web server world, access granted, forbidden, unauthorized. You need this thing, and this is more or less the result of the tickle. You have there the state and the result, and you just have this two dimension comes in very handy for working with this. Another thing related with security, but not only, is the so-called context constraints. What is this? I mean, many things in NaviServer happens around the so-called URL tries. I mean, the try structure is something like this one, where actually a path you can read along the edges. This is just ACS admin package, for example, and this is more or less keeping this place there. And what you can do there in normal since a couple of releases, there a tickle call, it's called NSUL space set. You can see everything which matches to foo x incident value. It's something like an associative array or the NS set, in a way it's thread safe, but it's used with patterns and uses tree structure. And you can see, for example, every whatever tickle file under ACS admin, and you write it here in this pattern there. And to resolve this here, actually, you have sometimes a method, you have here a path, and you have a pattern. This is the thing which is more or less here, just this path to be resolved. And this was very long, just from the C-level accessible, and a couple of times it's there. And it's used for whatever, for permission handling, for example, in this NSPer module. There's also this CGI handling, where you say whatever, everything which ends with whatever PHP should be handled by the CGI handler, and you pass it different environment variables and whatever. And what's new in NaviServer 5 is here to extend this whole thing by having here also a request context. And the request context here all of the information comes from the request first line, from this URL you get in receiving there. And by this context, you're using also the connection context. I mean, it's different if somebody from the outside calls this or somebody from the inside. I mean, you have the URL pattern, an IP pattern. It can be single IP address, or it can be the like a partial qualification here, just the idea handling here. And you can see that each time a request comes here from the admin, do something, for example. And this is more or less constraining requests on from where they're coming. And from where they're coming, also you have access here to the header fields. Depending on the header fields, you can do different things. If you have something, a server in front of this, which provides you with whatever information already, people are getting longer and longer redirect change here. You can say, okay, in these cases, I know this is already verified and I do not have to make my own stuff here and so on. That means this is coming in here and this context constraints can be used wherever, more or less, these patterns are used. And it's also extended to be also used for these filters, which I have mentioned before. Before, these filters were simply string matches. Now it's a string match plus more or less a matching on the IP addresses and header fields. And also one thing that's new is it's a match inside the path is possible. If you have a long path here, you can see at this place, if it matches, it has to be different. I mean, it's just, for example, it was necessary for the CGI part and Franz Lena, we just tried to make an easier configuration and setup and fix many things in the CGI backup, and then it turned out we need this there for having it, and therefore it went into the code. Then about something like certificate management and getting security by default out of this. I mean, the point is that if once you introduce security by default, it's bad for website administrators, because everything which worked perfectly before stops working out. And if you ignore the validation, it doesn't matter whether the client has a safe site certificate or it was the expired certificate or whatever, it simply works. And therefore, one needs some kind of a mechanism handling for this. And if you think you have you're starting an outgoing HTTP request from a different website, receives a certificate, we have here this insecure flag. Okay, if it's insecure, if you put it in, then you're done, but it's not recommended to do it. It's just the last thing for an admin to do if nothing is there. Okay? If the certificate is afterwards is valid after this check, okay, process with the request. Otherwise, it's a thing there which is also new, there's a thing called validation exception. You can say, for every internal site, I don't care if it's a safe sign certificate. For external site, you care. Therefore, you can define here validation exceptions, what kind of things to accept from which place. By this, you can manage as an admin. For these things, it's fine with me if it's not certificate. For others, it's not. Therefore, you have to have this differently. And therefore, you can define exception rules. The rejected certificates are connected at the own place. You can configure for these invalid certificates, and you can check what's there. And for the certificate checking there, there's a CL bundle, which is one of the standard things you get also for most other systems. And you have here a place where you have still accepted certificates. You can put in this directory whatever certificate you see. This is fine with me, and therefore, if you figure out here, from this, there was, for whatever reason, the exception rules didn't work, you can put certificates in here, and it's making your exception and making handle. Therefore, it is a way to more or less smoothly migrate from the insecure world to the secure world in this way. Another thing here, which is quite new in RSA 5, is this persistent connections for outgoing requests. I mean, incoming requests were, since many ages, a persistent connection, but for outgoing requests. That means, now if you send a request to a web service, then you want to keep afterwards the connection open. Why do you want to keep it open? Because the connection setup, especially for TLS, for HTTPS, it's expensive. It's a long handshake, and if you do it over and over again, it's costing a lot of performance. And but it's an outgoing request. Therefore, this this command to make a request, and this might come from different threads, more or less at the same time. And to manage this, you have somehow a way to keep this context and manage this context for all of this the servers. And you get afterwards some whatever bigger statistics. And it's also necessary not only to make a single outgoing request, because then everything is queuing up in one connection chain. I mean, if you have a service like whatever Microsoft, and you have the 1,000 requests going there, you want to scale up afterwards, have many of them. And there's a management how many, if you're running out of pace on one of the connections, you open another one and have multiple contexts which are dynamically scaling. I mean, also this persistent connection infrastructure is also very useful for other applications like reverse proxy and forward proxy. I mean, a reverse proxy receives from a client a request and forwards it afterwards to upstream server. And the same thing as before, if this connection is going up there is always the same mechanism, having here persistent connection certainly scales everything up, making it faster. And this is very similar with a forward proxy. A forward proxy means you say, I mean, it was the first proxy servers when HTTP came out. Today, I think it's not much used anymore, but there are scenarios where you still need it. Yeah. But it's just that you send a request to the server, and this server afterwards sends the request to the real backend server. You can do caching or whatever, and filtering there, and what kind of requests do you allow to the outside world. And this is more or less now handled by the same client infrastructure on the last slide with these improved features here. And certainly you can also set up everything from here with these context constraints. You can say, I only want to have requests going to my internal server if it's coming from another internal server, for example. And you can combine this framework here in a very flexible way. I mentioned before documentation. And documentation is always a pain in the ass of a developer. And I see many people have experienced this as well. And I mean, what the situation is in Navi Server, I think not worse than in other systems, but it happens that some commands were implemented but not documented. It happened to be that some commands were documented but not implemented as well, because it was created. And it happens that some options of documents, of commands, were documented, but the subcommands there didn't exist. I mean, it's just providing flags there which were not there. And the same thing is flags which were there were not documented documentation. I mean, it's just a long thing. And also whatever a listing of what commands are more or less deprecated or not was never complete. And deprecated commands were used in examples how to use the system. Therefore, there are many things, it's a long story. With Navi Server 5, I mean, the documentation is done also before this with DocTools. Many thanks to Andreas Kupris for this wonderful tool. But Navi Server 5, what we're doing in the release stuff more or less is just we are passing the generated documentation, collect information. We are passing the regression test and look what's tested here and what is the feedback from these tests and compare this. And we are passing the source code. Maybe there are C implemented commands, which I don't see from the outside world here. And are there some C implemented commands also coming there? And afterwards, you more or less check the consistency. And I mean, there were several hundreds of problems determined this way. And it's a statistic world is not in Navi Server has now 728 tested commands, 91 of these deprecated commands. Tested commands are deprecated and the rest is here documented and nothing is not documented. And the other way around, documented commands which are not tested, you want to have every for every documented command have at least a minimal test. It never covers all of them, but still, it's the first requirement to have this, and therefore, it's from this point of view, it's just a statistic which helps there a lot. I think I'm also close to the coming close to the end. This is just a another thing with the which is getting I think more important and also coming to the more modern whatever requirements is streaming client responses. I mean, if you have an outgoing request and you want to get incrementally the output from there. And it's, for example, you have it here for generative AI. You have here, you're asking ChatGPT some kind of query and you get piecewise some words here. And you do it with classical NSHTTP, you create a client request, you wait until everything is there, this is nothing, and then here's the result. Here you can see it piecewise showing up. And it has also big consequences on performance altogether, because the same story as before, blocking times reduced by this. And you see here just from the OpenSS side here, the CBS browser, which is for historical reason external program based on Apache and Postgres, and it's horribly slow. And I mean, you see here just the scalability of how long this forward proxying to the backend works decreased significantly. And you see here, we see often here, whatever 110 reverse proxy. I mean, just this normal OpenSS site, and has several subsites. And one of them is the CVS browser interface, which is the reverse proxy, and it gets up to 110 reverse proxy seconds requests per second. And many of them are quite fast, but some of them are quite slow. You see also here some kind of a time cap sometimes here, where you see that some requests don't take longer there. And where, for example, then it comes down to some kind of critical. And simply the scalability here increased here significantly. And I mean, just to show that it's also something from the user interface point of view. I mean, new release means some kind of a cleanup also for things. A normal developer doesn't care, but if you're a new person installing NaviServer, it should look somehow more modern and it shouldn't be completely outdated what is offering, and it should provide you with security alerts. You have not changed the password, please provide the password here at this place. It's also the same layout is produced simply by it's without external libraries, it's mostly CSS, and the same layout is used for the starting page, for all of the documentation, and also for the statistics environment with pull-down menus and so on, and it's everything without external libraries, and it supports dark mode. That means if you are on the smartphone in the evening, you get this variant, and otherwise all the way around. I mean, there are some kind of dark mode automatically matters, but it doesn't work really well if we have the different kind of color schemes which are more involved. And I think it skips this configurability. And just from the last slide here, covered a couple of things here. And maybe some interesting last message is, I mean, the average code age of NaviServer is 9.8 years. What does it mean? I mean, it just, this number is based on a line-by-line analysis. Which line, not file, which line survived from the year 2000 until today? And by this, you can afterwards compute afterwards the average code age. And here you see here, more or less, that from the year 2000, 5.11% of the code is still unchanged from the dark ages. And you see there, many changes were coming in this year. It's just 10% of the code has changed there. And altogether, it's 9.8 years. I mean, there are a lot of commercial software out there which is much older from the code age. I mean, it's just modernized code, it means, and it's just done there in a way that I think we are on a good way for the next whatever, 10 years with this famous last words, with this changes. Okay, then. Thank you very much for your attention. Questions?
Gustav.
I have two questions. Unfortunately, I don't know a lot about open OpenACS, but it's really exciting to see all of these changes. I'm especially interested in the streaming. Like, can you, HTTP streaming is one thing, but you mentioned web services. Can you generate JSON in a streaming manner too?
I mean, this is for incoming requests.
Okay.
You're receiving JSON code from somebody else, and you can afterwards incrementally show it up.
Okay, I can.
I think for generating JSON, the right person sitting here, it's just Wolf. I mean, I think there are many stories you can tackle this, but certainly you can also, with the scripted thing, I think you mentioned it today, it's quite easy to make it on the fly with the right escaping and so on. Therefore, it's not only a question that you produce some kind of a JSON code, but if you have a variable with whatever quotes or backslashes or you name it, it should be properly escaped and so on. And this is something where Wolf is currently working on and implemented it.
So you're using Tito.
Second question.
About the TLS exception handling and so on. I mean, I have to say you're already way ahead of Node.js on this one, because
we are always ahead of Node.js because Node.js is much newer.
Can this be implemented in TickleLib, you think, for the standard HTTP outgoing requests, or will it be difficult?
I mean, if you ask a computer scientist, can it be done? Actually, yes.
Yeah.
Is it feasible? It depends on the effort and on the. I mean, what is? We have no TickleLib implementation for TLS. We have here this Tickle module, Tickle TLS, and it could also be implemented there. But it's an old code, and you need some callbacks to be defined to get this data out of open SSL, and you have to assume that this infrastructure is there, and there's a lot of work with different versions of OpenSSL, and it's different between 1.0 generation and was previous, it was not available, and 3 is. I mean, it's some work, and it can be done. It's just a matter of effort how to do this. There are some efforts, and Ralf knows it, that it's just going on to getting TLS to a new life, but it is some work to do it, it's no question. And also, my experience is I made a couple of changes there which were necessary on our side for TLS, which for whatever reason, nobody else seems to me, people maintaining it don't care about this, therefore these people are also very conservative because nobody wants to change the running sites. Therefore, I prefer to have an environment where I control what's going on, and then you can move this on rather than having some kind of a permanent, whatever, pullback from the other parts of the community. Many people don't care and so on. Therefore, it can be done. It needs some kind of, let's say, persuasion work, and needs some implementation work. Where the first part is the harder one.
Yes, it's true. Thank you.
Additional questions? Okay, I have a question. Your multi-map list, your multi-map smells like list abstraction candidate. Abstract list candidate.
Yeah.
Is there any link or have you looked to that?
I mean, and the set is 30 years old.
Yeah.
Nobody at this time was anticipating that in 2024 this abstraction will come into being. I mean, you can implement.
Yeah.
But the question is it afterwards? How good is it afterwards? But certainly it can be done. And also, I mean, it's this multi-map thing is. I think you can do so in TKL. I mean, once you have key attribute values and you do not put them in a dict, everything is fine. And you can possess them at any time, anyway, and you can make simply scripted emulation of the whole thing, what NSF does. But the question is how efficient is it afterwards and so on. It's just another story, but you can do it.
Yeah. we will later have a speech on it, but it allows to have best things of both worlds. You have a custom type and you have speed and you have standard. You can do a length on it. Yeah, for example. Okay, great.
But you can also do it on NSET has all of this thing already built in. I mean,
yeah.
It's a long API already, yeah. And you can do all of this on the list.
Right.
And at least abstraction will make it more performant than you simply have in this.
Thank you. Okay. So, thanks for the speech.
Yes, you
announce the next speaker.